Welcome friends to Literature Mantra. I'm Harsh Singh, and in this lecture we will discuss feminist literary criticism. But even before discussing feminist literary criticism, we should understand what is feminism in general. Now, aap sab logon ne suna hoga feminism ke bare mein. But broadly speaking, what is the definition of it? See, feminism basically is about creating a situation of equality between men and women. Ek simple definition ye ho sakta. So, feminism stems from the belief in the social, economic and political equality of men and women, and feminism can be understood both as a diverse body of theoretical work as well as a social and political movement. So as a matter of definition, this can be a good starting point towards our understanding of what is feminism. Now uske baad aate hain ki what is feminist literary criticism. So visually, if we were to understand what is feminism and what is feminist literary criticism, suppose we have a big Venn diagram. The bigger circle represents feminism, and within that bigger circle, if we were to create a smaller circle, that will represent feminist literary criticism. ठीक है, मतलब visually if we were to understand. So in other words, कहने का ये मतलब है that feminism is a larger area. It has many dimensions, and feminist literary criticism is the literary dimension of the larger political social movement. Okay, so feminist literary criticism as a definition is about interpreting, reinterpreting literature using the premises, principles, assumptions that underpin feminism. In other words, feminist literary criticism is a part of the larger social and political movement called feminism. So uske baad baat karte hain ki what are the main assumptions of feminist literary criticism. Now first assumption is that human civilization, barring few, which may be called matriarchal, not just in one country but around the world, okay, human civilizations are male dominated. Okay, so except a few, there are few civilizations or few communities in the world which are matriarchal, but most of them are patriarchal. Okay, this is the first assumption. Second assumption is even societies, families, even rituals and traditions and cultural practices are designed and operate in a way that benefits males and places women in a disadvantageous situation. This is the second assumption. For example, the freedoms and liberties of women are generally curtailed in the name of propriety or morality or sense of duty. ठीक है, ये सब चीजें कह के generally what we see in families is curbing of their freedoms. Now consequently, because of these hindrances, women are not able to grow intellectually, economically, despite possessing the talent to do so. So this is the second assumption. Now the next assumption, third one, patriarchy or patriarchal standards also pervades much of the literary work produced in earlier centuries. Of course, gender sensitivity is evident in modern literature, but much of the literature of earlier centuries displays patriarchal standards. Okay, this is the third assumption about literature in general. So these were some assumptions. Now feminism came about or started in waves. ठीक है, waves or phases. So there is the first wave, there is the second wave, there is the third wave, and after that some writers say there is the fourth wave or the post-feminist wave. So the first thing that you should do is know about the three different phases or three different waves of feminism, first, second and third, and how one wave differs from the next wave. Okay, what are the principles in the second wave, for instance, which were not there in the first wave? What are the principles that were there in the third wave but not there in the second wave? Okay, and in the first wave, two writers are particularly important. One is Mary Wollstonecraft, okay, the famous Mary Wollstonecraft, and the second is Margaret Fuller. Okay, these are amongst the two most important writers in the first wave. And particularly Mary Wollstonecraft's work called A Vindication of the Rights of Women. ठीक है, this was published in 1792. ठीक है, and Margaret Fuller's work is called Women in the 19th Century. ठीक है, Women in the 19th Century. And Wollstonecraft suggests that gender roles are not natural but social. And Wollstonecraft also attacked writers like Rousseau, who had suggested that women do not require an education. And she also states that women should strive to become companions rather than mere wives to their husbands. Okay, so in the first wave there was the civil rights movement, then the suffragette movement or the right to vote. This is something also which happened during the first wave. Demands for education of women, all of this was taking place during the first wave, but broadly speaking, the first wave of feminism was careful not to disturb the gender hierarchies. Now, after that, Margaret Fuller, on the other hand, was a bit more radical, more radical than Mary Wollstonecraft. And she went a step ahead of Mary Wollstonecraft, and she said that she did not support gender-specific rules. But like Wollstonecraft, she supported education for women, and in addition, she demanded political rights for women, matlab right to vote. Because if you see the history of Western countries, of course they had democracy even before democracy came in India, but the voting right to women came later on for them. Matlab, when democracy started in the West, automatically everybody didn't get voting rights. It is only in the early 1900s that voting right was gradually extended to women. So this is one of the issues during the first wave of feminism. Now, uske baad baat karte hain, in the second wave of feminism, which roughly began in the 1960s, the work of Simone de Beauvoir is important. And in her work called The Second Sex, the Second Sex, there's a famous line called, "One is not born, but rather becomes a woman." Okay, within quotes, "One is not born, but rather becomes a woman," unquote. So, what she actually means by this is that it is civilization as a whole, human civilization, that produces the creature which is described as feminine. And see, the second wave of feminism was more radical than the first one. Okay, so a bit more radical, but it still cannot be called radical feminism. Now, you might have heard about the term radical feminism, but second wave was more radical than the first, but cannot be called radical feminism. Okay? Now, Simone de Beauvoir says that patriarchy uses the pretext or excuse of biological difference to maintain inequality between men and women. And she also said that the words gender and sex, okay, these two words are not the same. Gender is sociological or something which has a sociological dimension, whereas the word sex is more biological or related to human anatomy. Now, men or males, using this excuse of biological difference, enforce inequality in rights, in duties with respect to men and women. And there is something called the othering, okay, within quotes, othering. Othering of women. And there is also mystification and stereotyping of women. So this is what Simone de Beauvoir wants to say when she talks about the methods used by men to maintain inequality between men and women. Now, after that, another important writer is Virginia Woolf. Especially her work called Room of One's Own. Room of One's Own. Now, Virginia Woolf, of course, is also famous as a novelist, especially because she writes in the stream of consciousness mode of narrative technique. But this work by her, Room of One's Own, this is important from the perspective of feminism. And it is in this work that there is a mention of the famous fictitious character of Judith Shakespeare. Okay, Judith Shakespeare. Now, Judith Shakespeare basically is a fictitious sister of William Shakespeare. And how, and she describes, Virginia Woolf describes how Judith, or those women as talented as Judith, would have faced many hardships, discrimination, and they were not allowed to refine their craft or refine their gift which they were born with. If, for instance, as Virginia Woolf says, that if there were a sister of William Shakespeare as gifted as the writer William Shakespeare, then ultimately William Shakespeare finds success as a writer, as a playwright, but Judith Shakespeare would not have found success. And she goes on to list the various problems that gifted women or talented women face. And this work of Virginia Woolf, Room of One's Own, is also considered a manifesto of feminism. Okay, so from that perspective, you should remember this. Now, after that, the third wave. Now, the third wave broadly began in the 1980s. Okay, now writers like Judith Butler argued that gender, okay, within quotes, gender is a performance, kind of enactment. And Butler's work called, you know, Gender Trouble. Gender Trouble, this is a very famous work. And the complete title is Gender Trouble, Feminism and the Subversion of Identity. Okay? And it is in this work that Judith Butler proposes the idea of performativity or gender being a performance. Okay? And using postmodern and post-structuralist techniques, feminists reinterpret the word gender. So the meaning of the word gender for them is unstable or not fixed. So the word gender does not have a single meaning. For instance, if a particular dress kapda, a dress represented a certain gender earlier, in earlier times. That need not be the case now, because depending on location, time, necessities, the meaning of gender are constantly reinvented. Take for instance, if in earlier times, jeans were something only worn by men. In today's time, wearing jeans is no longer the attribute of males or a masculine attribute. Then another instance can be, for example, if we consider an Indian household, okay? Earlier means in earlier centuries, the male members or male head of the family would say that the work of women is taking care of children, husband, household, work, and then domesticity. But now in the 21st century, a young couple or let's say a nuclear family where a husband is not earning enough or let's say on his own, or let's say a slightly broad-minded husband would say that earning money and making a financial contribution to the household is also important for a wife. Okay? Wife, or let's say wives in general, might say to their husband that taking care of children is also the responsibility of husbands. And even husbands should assist in household work if they can and if they have time to do so. So, try to understand my point that the notion or ideas associated with gender, okay, or gender roles tend to change with changing requirements, be it financial requirements, be it social requirements, be it familial requirements. So, this is the contribution of Judith Butler when she talks about performativity. Okay, so performativity ka ye matlab hai. Now, after that, in the third wave feminism, theorists like Butler start mixing feminism with other post-structuralist and post-modern theories. So, the theorization about feminism or feminist positions become even more sophisticated in the third wave and beyond. Beyond, we can say that there is also the fourth wave or let's say post-feminism. So, the theorization becomes even more sophisticated. Now, more and more dimensions are added to the movement of feminism. Now, in addition to this, you should know what is the work of feminist literary critics. For instance, the first important thing which feminist literary critics do is rewriting the literary canon. Okay? Rewriting the literary canon. See, for centuries, women writers, talented women writers, have not found a place in the literary canon. So, feminist literary criticism involves discovery of such texts written by women and inclusion of those texts and mention of those writers in the literary canon. Now, for example, you might have read about Afra Behn's plays. Afra Behn was not earlier included in the literary canon, but only later on she found recognition. Okay, so rewriting the literary canon to include more and more women writers who deserve recognition, whose works had merit. After that, the next work of feminist literary critics is examining the flawed, distorted, or biased representations of women in literature by men and offering a critique of it. For example, if you have read the criticism of Kate Millett, in particular Kate Millett's critique of Sons and Lovers by D.H. Lawrence, you'd understand that in some ways Kate Millett is right in criticizing D.H. Lawrence in his depiction of women in the novel Sons and Lovers. Now, the next job of feminist literary critics is exploration of the question of whether there can be a female language. In other words, languages that draw its origins or words or phrases that trace their origin in the unique experience of women. And the famous writer Helene Cixous, in her work called The Laugh of Medusa, okay, The Laugh of Medusa coins a term called a creature feminine, okay, a creature feminine, now which basically means a gendered language, okay, a gendered language. Now, after that, critics like Elaine Shalter, they say that we should have a unique mode of criticism. And this type of criticism she calls gynocriticism. Okay, gynocriticism. G-N-O-C-R-I-T-I-C-I-S-M. Gynocriticism. Now, after this, you should be aware of the important works by feminist writers, feminist critics. Along with that, you should also be aware of the important words and phrases which they have coined. For example, a creature feminine. I already spoke about this. So, they can ask you in the exam, what is the meaning of a creature feminine? Then, what does gynocriticism mean? I explained that. Then, few more words I would like to point out. Performativity, I have discussed. Then, another important word is Kora. C-H-O-R-A, Kora. Now, what is the meaning of Kora? Kora basically means the pre-linguistic stage of a child's development. Now, when a child is born and when that child acquires language, in between that stage, there is the, it is called the pre-linguistic stage. So that is called Kura. Now, another important word is womanism. Okay, womanism. This word has been coined by writer Alice Walker, and it just refers to the black women's feminism. So, a kind of solidarity amongst black women, recognizing their contribution, their challenges ahead. So, this was a short overview of feminism, of feminist literary criticism. Then, what is the work of feminist literary critics? After that, also you should pay attention to the important works by feminist writers. Uske baad, you should also keep in mind the important words and phrases that various feminist critics have coined, whether it be Kora, whether it be performativity, whether it be gynocriticism. Okay, so all of these aspects which I have explained are important from an exam point of view. Theek hai?